Welcome in to a Tuesday morning edition of the Locked On Knicks podcast. Today we're taking a look at how the current NBA Finals participants became champions and how the Knicks can replicate that model.
And today we're going to start with the Golden State Warriors, the incumbent champions, obviously the pinnacle of the NBA for the last five seasons or so. We start off talking about how we got here with the Warriors, how this whole process came to be, and how this dynasty was created. We're going to talk about the good and whatever bad we can conjure up, although there's very little bad to be told of with the Warriors. And then we'll finally finish off by giving some of the examples that the Knicks can take from the Warriors and things that they can use to potentially get to that status sometime in the future. So all that's coming up and more on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Knox foul from behind, count it at one. Fisdale pumps his fist.
What he does is contagious.
Robinson with a catch and slam. Across the lane to Trier. Trier drives.
Becomes infectious.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast. I'm Gavin Shaw. Across the river, he is Alex Wolf. And we hope you are listening on our favorite podcast app, Himalaya. It's free, it's super easy to use, and it has every single podcast you love or are searching for. One of the coolest new features in Himalaya is they allow you to make personally curated playlists, and then you can like and comment. If you're listening, you can give a thumbs up and comment on individual episodes, which we certainly hope you do for Locked On Knicks, because I'm an extremely vain individual, and when you combine that with some level of insecurity, it means a thumbs up just about makes my day. So you can give us a thumbs up and you can comment on our episodes on the Himalaya podcast app. And then you can build podcast playlists by the episode. You can customize it just like a playlist for songs and then share it through social media, text or email. So if you have a friend, a girlfriend, anything in between that you're talking to about your podcast listening habits and you're like, you know what, let me show you. I'm going to throw this together. You can shoot it over to them only on Himalaya. So that's pretty awesome. All right, Alex, without further ado, we already sort of broke down the premise of this one, but just to reiterate, we're going back in the time machine and we're looking at how the Golden State Warriors and tomorrow how the Toronto Raptors got built and basically just breaking down every single element of it and coming up with takeaways on what the Knicks can do to, if not replicate it, just general good team building ideas that tend to result in the case of the Warriors, a dynasty, in the case of the Raptors, an NBA Finals team.
Yeah, and the Raptors, I mean, it's easy to forget, but the Raptors, you know, despite having playoff performance issues the few years before this, they've been a consistent, you know, 1-2 seed. I don't know what their worst seed in the last like 5 years has been, maybe four or something like that. But I mean, they've been a top four seed for, you know, a fairly long time now in NBA terms, like pretty much as long as the Warriors have been dominating the, you know, the pinnacle of the league. They've been, you know, one of the better teams in the East for the last number of years. So, you know, Gavin, I think it's important to probably first, when we're breaking down the Warriors, just kind of talk about how we got here. So I think the three most important pieces to the Warriors are all homegrown, which obviously resonates with a lot of Knicks fans. And, you know, it's something that always comes up when you talk about, you know, how you want to win a championship. And some people look at it with the Durant talk, you know, coming up in this offseason. They're like, yeah, but it just wouldn't feel the same as if they were like our players and our superstars or whatever. And the Warriors are the reason that people, I think, are mostly thinking like this, you know, in the present day. Because so many other teams that have been successful, I mean, the Heat, you know, obviously they had Wade who was a guy that they had brought along, but, you know, they built a super team through free agency. The Cavs, you could even say, basically built their team through trades and free agency when they won the title a few years ago. But the Warriors, they drafted Steph Curry, seventh overall in the 2009 draft. Of course, famously one spot before the Knicks, after the Knicks had kind of telegraphed it way too hard that they wanted Steph Curry. And I guess the Warriors caught on and were like, oh, maybe this is someone we should pay attention to since the Knicks seem so dead set on drafting this kid. So they took him first. He was sort of the first part of this whole formula. Klay Thompson was drafted 11th in the 2011 draft, and then they drafted Draymond Green 35th in the 2012 draft in the second round, one of the better second round picks probably in history, not even just in the last 10 years or so.
Yeah, and it was I think that's a good point. And it's a run that I'm excited to get into this, I guess, specifically because, like, I don't think any team – I mean, I guess the Thunder sort of did it with Durant, Harden, Westbrook. But in terms of drafting three guys whose skill sets were so complementary and all are – I mean, you could make an argument one way or the other for Draymond if he had ended up on a different team. But, I mean, all are probably future Hall of Famers. And you got two of them outside the top 10, and they all fit together in that way. Like, in like a very specific sense, like, how are you ever going to pull that off again? And then getting a guy like Andre Iguodala in free agency who went on to win a Finals MVP, and then that's not even throwing the Durant element into the mix. Like, on paper, it looks like it can never, ever happen. But I think, and to your credit, you did a really good job writing this out for us, and I'm going to let you get into it. But there are kind of these clear takeaways and team-building philosophies you can pull from the Warriors and say, okay, we can apply that to ourselves, even if the odds of doing it as well as them are very low.
Yeah, I mean, so things to keep in mind. Like, first off, they signed the Warriors' first, like, star free agent, if you want to be kind about it, was David Lee, who they signed away from the Knicks in the summer 2010. And that sort of started things. Like, I think people tend to forget about that. But then their next, like, really big signing was Andre Iguodala, who you just mentioned. They signed him 2013 to 2014 season. They got him on board. They signed Sean Livingston, who's turned into – I mean, he's just been one of the – like, as far as their role players are concerned, it's been Iguodala and Livingston are, like, the one common thread that has, you know, pretty much lasted this whole run of dominance that they've had other than their three-star starters is Iguodala and Livingston. And they signed Livingston before the 14-15 season, obviously the first championship year. But then, you know, other little moves too, like Quinn Cook, I mean, I think is probably on this year's team probably the best example of looking for diamonds in the rough and finding guys that can contribute maybe in unconventional places. I mean, Cook had bounced around to two or three teams on like 10-day deals and, you know, that sort of thing and playing for G League teams, things like that. And then finally, the Warriors brought him on last year as a two-way contract in the first year of two-way deals. By the end of the year, they converted him and had him play in the playoffs for them last year. And then this year, he's been a huge presence for them. And he's getting really big minutes in the NBA Finals. He hit, like, a large number of, you know, clutch three-pointers the other day in Game 2. So, you know, they went with that. But I guess, I don't know, before we get into the obvious two huge names that have sort of shaped who they are today. I mean, what do you think just in general, like the process of how they built this? I think it's like underrated. To me, it feels like because of how like iconic their like drafting ability was, the Warriors, I feel like their ability to get together like good complementing role players has been sort of overshadowed. And like in present day, their role player like lineup has not been as good as a result, just because they kind of went the route of like spending all their money on stars, and it became a lot more difficult to fill out the roster with those like good complementary pieces.
Yeah, but you even look at Game 2 last night, and you see the remnants of all the smart decisions they made are still coming into play. And I don't want to go too far down this road, because I think next segment when we're really going to kind of get into specifics, this is something I want to touch on more. But they signed like the same types of guys over and over again. Like Iguodala, I mean, initially he was a star when they signed him. At this point, you'd be able to call him a role player, but one of the greatest role players ever. And just a dude who's super duper smart, obviously extremely talented defensively, but even at this point in his career, we're sort of riddled by injuries, not quite the same explosive athlete as he was. He's just one of those guys that if you get it to him on a passing sequence with 7 seconds left in the game and he has to hit a three on the road to essentially, I mean, obviously they still would have been up by 2 points, but I mean, guarantee that they avoid going down 0-2 in the NBA Finals. Like, he's able to do that without a second of hesitation. And I don't know about you, Alex, but watching that game, like, I never had a doubt that shot was going in, and that's such a luxury to have that out of a role player. And then even a guy like Sean Livingston, who's been super up and down these playoffs, I think the rumor is he's probably going to retire after this season. Another guy who just came on when they absolutely needed someone to soak up some minutes with Durant hurt and then Clay out late. And he made he was just making smart passes and he held his own defensively and he could fit into whatever style of play they needed to down the stretch. You mix in two more guys. Quinn Cook made those two threes. Andrew Bogut somehow had three alley-oops of like 35, like a guy who any other team in the NBA probably could have had. I assume no one else showed interest. And the Warriors are just like, you know what, within our infrastructure, we think that guy can be successful. And he hasn't played a whole lot, but when they just needed someone, when Looney got hurt, he came off the bench and it worked. And you can sort of debate whether this is a chicken or the egg situation. Like, are the Warriors just great at signing these role players that no other team saw? Or do all those like role players with hyper-specific skills work because they're centered around a team built out of superstars? And when you're playing with Steph Curry and like all the attention Steph Curry draws, Andrew Bogut, who's basically like unable to walk at this point, like he can get those open lobs because Curry's going to draw two guys. And I don't really know the answer there. The truth is probably a little bit of both. But I guess my only point would be is even now that we're a little further down that road of them building themselves around superstars, they made such good decisions at the beginning of this run that they can survive even when the greatest of those superstars, Durant, goes out with an injury.
Yeah, well, so that brings us to Durant himself, obviously. So when we're talking about how we got here to the present day iteration of the Warriors, you know, the 2014 to 15 version that won that first title and then the 15 to 16 that set the regular season wins record and came up just short in the finals, obviously, those were kind of the more quote unquote homegrown Warriors teams. And the last few years now we've had sort of the mercenary Warriors where they signed Kevin Durant. 3 years ago now. Now, of course, everybody I feel like knows that story. Draymond Green called him from the parking lot, apparently, after the Warriors lost to the Cavs in that finals in 2016. Because of the NBA securing a new TV deal, which resulted in like an obscene like 30% spike in the salary cap in one off season. Combined with having Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green making less than what they were worth under the new cap because Steph had signed a below market value contract when his ankles were still considered, you know, garbage. And, you know, he signed for like $12 million a year or something, and it was like a 4-year contract. And then Draymond and Klay had both signed what at the time were max level extensions that they're still on to this day that paid them, you know, about I think by the time that they're done with their contracts, they're getting like $17, $18 million a year, something like that. So definitely below market value for what they're worth now on today's market. So they signed Kevin Durant to a max contract, which was, you know, unheard of and probably a once in a lifetime event for, capologists out there and stuff, which it was, you know, say what you want about it. It was either the greatest thing that ever happened to the NBA or the worst thing that ever happened to the NBA. But it was definitely interesting, and it's been interesting these last few years to see just how dominant a team can truly be when you put two of probably the top three or four best players in the league on a team together with a number of other guys that are also, you know, respectively in the top 20 of players in the NBA. And then, of course, this year you got Boogie Cousins signed there. A 1-year deal for the mid-level exception. It was worth about $5.3 million, and it was sort of a prove-it deal. That's usually something I think you see more like in football, stuff like that. It's a prove-it deal where a guy signs and, you know, he signs for less than what he's worth because he knows he's going to be able to get playing time somewhere. You know, just signs for a single season and then, you know, tries to chase a bigger contract at the end of the year. Cousins, in this case, it was because he had an Achilles tear last year. The market for a long-term deal wasn't what he wanted it to be, so he signed on with the Warriors where he wouldn't be rushed to come back from his Achilles tear and would be able to get some quality minutes in the playoffs, which obviously didn't work out because he missed the better part of the whole playoffs. He's back now, but missed most of it with an unfortunate injury again. Probably doesn't help his free agent case this coming offseason. But so he signed there as well, another all-star, all-NBA talent that, you know, signed with the Warriors. And then lastly, as far as the coach is concerned, they had Mark Jackson on for a while. He sort of took them back to the playoffs and back to being a good team, the Warriors. But The Warriors decided that he wasn't the best coach to take them over the top, fired him, hired Steve Kerr before that first championship 14-15 season. And, of course, the rest is history. As far as that's concerned, Steve Kerr has proved to be one of the more innovative and interesting coaches that I think has ever been seen in the NBA to this point.
Yeah, another great decision. So we're going to take a quick break, and then we will come back, and we're going to dive like a little bit deeper on this methodology, and then we'll take another one, and we'll get into how the Knicks can replicate it. That next on Locked On Knicks.
Welcome back in, everyone, to Locked On Knicks. I'm Alex Wolf. He's Gavin Shaw. We are breaking down the Golden State Warriors first, and then trying to draw some lessons from them, trying to figure out how the Knicks could potentially get to this, you know, wonderful plane that the Warriors are on someday. Although I'm kind of the belief that we might be witnessing something that's probably never going to happen again as far as sustained dominance, especially in the NBA, unless there's another weird circumstance that allows like the cap shenanigans that happened with the Warriors to happen again. Cause it was such a weird, the way that they got Durant and everything else just is so peculiar. But at any rate, so we're going to break down the good things. And of course there's, you know, only like a million good things to say about the Warriors and how they've been built to this point, how they're run, all that stuff. But like, I would say that the first thing is that they've really become an attractive free agent destination. And I think that's important. Obviously you saw it pay off with Durant. But even before that, when it looked like things were starting to turn around for them, they lured Iguodala, like we talked about already. They brought on Sean Livingston, you know, who we also talked about, who's been so important to them. And he turned down, you know, offers that could have paid him more money to come to Golden State because he liked what they were doing and he thought that they were going to give him a good chance to win and a good chance for playing time. They've hit and miss. I mean, certain guys are much better than others that they've had, but they've had a number of guys come on minimum deals or close to minimum deals that have, you know, really played good roles for them in the playoffs. You could talk about Zaza Pachulia, something like that. Although his most enduring legacy, I think, as a Warrior is injuring Kawhi Leonard and taking him out of the Western Conference Finals. But guys like that, you know, they've, basically the bruisers, they've been very attractive to come in and just kind of like, you know, play their role and get their ring and that sort of thing. Because really, I mean, the Warriors have pretty much been a guaranteed title team or as close as you can get to a guaranteed title for about the last 5 years now.
Yeah. And it's just, it's such a luxury of riches. Like they've been so far ahead of everyone else. It's almost hard to tell where to start. I mean, you mentioned Durant and Cousins were both sort of unique, and those aren't worth going over outside of the sense that I think it's worth noting with all these things, and you can say the same thing about the Raptors and their decision to trade DeMar DeRozan for Kawhi. It's just that whatever level you get to in the NBA, you always want to push your margin for error higher. And it would have been easy to sort of say, like, after they'd won the first title with Steph Clay and Draymond, and even after they lost to the Cavs, like, you know, we don't really need Kevin Durant. Like, even us losing to Cleveland this year was sort of a fluke. Like, it took Draymond getting suspended in Game 5. It took these all-time performances from LeBron and Kyrie. We're good with the guys we have. Why would we shake it up? Why would we threaten any of these guys by bringing in another superstar? And even, I guess even less than that, like what team in that situation would even think about bringing in a Kevin Durant? Like it's just not something that ever really happened throughout NBA history. Like maybe the 70s Lakers with Wilt, but he was sort of even a little bit past his prime at that point. And like they didn't end up being nearly as dominant as this Warriors team. But I think that's sort of a two-part thing of having this organizational mentality of just being like, you know what, we're always going to try and be that much better. And I think that was the same thing with Cousins this year, because for the amount of money they brought him in, it was sort of no risk. It was like, okay, either we just have a lineup with five all-stars at all times, or he gets hurt, or he gets moody, and we drop him, or he's just not that big of a role player, and we have more than enough talent to win a title without him. But I think even beyond that, I mean, the reason you could even consider bringing in a guy like Durant is because they built around three stars who were totally selfless, in Steph, Clay, and Iggy, and a fourth in Draymond, who is obviously super duper competitive and can be a little bit of a dick, but at the same time is super aware. And you've seen all these really good articles on him this last week about just what – I know Zach Lowe wrote a really good one about just what a basketball genius he is. But the fact that that extends to him just recognizing the flaws in his own game, and I think he had a quote in one of the articles about his tendency when he has a wide open three to just sprint over to Curry or Clay and set a screen and sort of create that artificial two-on-one. And I think he said something like, you know, a good shot for Clay is better than a great shot for me. Like, and again, clearly Draymond is like the fourth best player, but he's also going to be a Hall of Famer probably. And not too many guys who are going to be Hall of Famers have that level of self-awareness. Like, I think you saw it a little bit on the Sixers this year. And like, not that like that was totally dysfunctional, but like those guys just didn't really know how to sort it all out. And you can make the argument that was more of a basketball issue where their games weren't that complimentary, but it's also a mental thing where it's like, okay, I do these things well. I don't do these things well. My teammate does do these things well. So I'm going to do everything in my power to ensure that they get to do those things more often than I do. And that's just on a team with this much talent. Like, what are the odds you also get those types of people? And it's just something that doesn't really happen very often in the NBA. And to me, that's sort of the formula for this insane run they've been on where they're probably going to win 4 titles in 5 years.
Yeah, well, and also the big thing that even led to them being able to have those, you know, the big three of Steph, Draymond, and Clay to start with was the fact that they were patient. And I think that that's something that definitely resonates as a Knicks fan, is being patient and seeing things through and not, you know, jumping off too early on certain players. I know that, you know, there's constant debates among fans and everything else with the Knicks of like Frank Ntilikina sucks, Kevin Knox sucks, you know, Alonzo Trier is imperfect, you know, Mitchell Robinson is, well, nobody says anything bad about Mitchell Robinson is the one galvanizing force among Knicks fans, but all the other players, you know, we've got these players that we've only had for, you know, a couple years, you know, trying to figure out what they are and what they can become. The thing with the Warriors is that they saw that whole process through and they dealt with the losing at first. They dealt with not being that good. You know, they had initially, you know, it feels like so long ago, but Steph Curry came into the league playing, you know, not even necessarily a Robin to Monta Ellis's Batman. And, you know, Monta Ellis was the guy who was supposed to be the star on that team. And, you know, the guy that was going to, you know, take them to some sort of relevance. And as it turned out, you know, he was basically shipped off and, you know, they never really looked back as far as he was concerned. But, you know, there was a time that Steph was, you know, considered a good scorer, but an imperfect player with a bad injury history and, you know, someone who you might not necessarily be able to build your team around. And Clay kind of came in right from the start and was kind of always who he was. But Draymond Green came in over his first couple of years and really didn't get a ton of playing time. You know, he didn't show nearly the, you know, the ball handling and all that that he has now. That's become such a staple and such a like brand new archetype for a player in the NBA that Draymond's become, of like this like point power forward type thing, you know, that we hadn't really seen before. And, you know, it's just the Warriors really, at least at the beginning, before, you know, things changed when they got Durant and they became like a mega team instead of just a super team. They built the super team strictly through the draft and through patience and making shrewd moves and signing the right guys and only the right guys. And, you know, I think that's probably, for me at least, one of the bigger takeaways that you can take away from, you know, what has led them to where they are now.
Yeah, definitely the individual development is a big deal. I mean, and you said it, like Steph just, he wasn't Steph when he first came into the league. I think the craziest stat to sort of sum up the combination of all these guys is you look at like two of like the five in the group, Andre Iguodala, he's never averaged more than double digits in a single season for the Warriors, and he won a finals MVP. Draymond has averaged double digits a bunch of years, but for his career at 9 points per game this year, he only averaged 7. And it's nuts. Like, I mean, it's that combination of talent and culture. Like, these guys who aren't even 10-point scorers in the regular season, like, literally capable of being the difference between winning a championship and not. And I guess, like, another avenue I wanted to mention that I thought when people, when they signed Durant and, like, obviously, like, the the overwhelming view was, okay, I mean, this is just a joke. They're just going to dominate the NBA over the next few years. But then there was also like that subset of people who were like, okay, well, but like, look at the Heat. Like everyone thought like they were just going to win like five titles in a row, and they ended up going 2-2 in championships. And the big difference there, or at least how I always saw it, was, yeah, but it was because LeBron wasn't really a shooter until like the end of his run with the Heat, and Wade was never a shooter. If you're built around three stars who can all shoot, I mean, three of probably the 10 best shooters of all time, that's sort of an exception. But just in general, if you're built around stars that can shoot, you're always going to be able to fit those guys together. And obviously there's something to be said like, all right, well, like if they're all like selfish players, but generally that's not like, I mean, like all these guys are like good enough and smart enough that if the spacing is there, it sort of induces ball movement just by its very nature and like a scrambling defense, and guys figure out a way to play together off of that. So in terms of, and again, this is sort of stepping on our third segment a little bit, but like what the Knicks can take away from this team is, I don't know if it's worth building a super team if it isn't one that's predicated around shooting. And again, I'll go to the Sixers example, because on paper, like maybe not quite the level of what the Warriors have, but you just look at them in terms of individual talents, like Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, Tobias Harris, Jimmy Butler, that's pretty close to as good as you can get when you're going to combine four guys on one team. But it just doesn't work in nearly the same way, because only one of them, and Harris, is really a great shooter, and he didn't even play like a great shooter for most of this year.
Yeah, and to your point, you know, the defensive versatility has been important as well. You know, the fact that the Warriors built their team around never really having, like, they're, again, you know, we're talking about all these things that they've sort of pioneered. They've essentially, for the last 5 years, completely changed the way that, you know, executives and fans and everybody look at the NBA now, and, you know, how you should build a team, and, you know, what's the best way to do it. And, you know, they've picked up guys that by and large can, you know, switch on defense constantly. Certainly helps that Draymond Green has been, you know, one of the best defenders in the league, like, period, for the last 4 or 5 years. But also, you know, they've drafted bigs that they've treated the big man like something, like a position that other than Cousins, but they got him at such a steep discount that it, you know, it would have been stupid not to get him. Most, like, quote unquote, like, true, like, old school ish bigs that they have, you know, they spend late draft picks on them. They take the time to develop them, like Kevin Looney, or Damian Jones, you know, guys like that. They spend picks on them and then, you know, get them acclimated and just get them out there to play a certain role, and that's it. And, you know, I think that's been important as well, you know, to have guys like that, that, you know, that can play, but not treating them as if they're, you know, like a super premium position, like not spending a ton of money on the center position and prioritizing shooting and switchable defense and stuff like that has certainly been a hallmark to how they've built their team.
Yeah, and again, this is sort of what I touched on last segment, but it's all about leveraging your superstars in the best way possible. And again, I'll say this with the qualifier, like, I don't think it's possible to replicate Steph Curry, because as much as everyone's like, okay, we're going to get more and more players like him, just because, I mean, he sort of opened up a new world for the NBA with guys shooting further and further and further. But sort of the beauty of that is, like, nothing's as good as the original. Like, you look like Damian Lillard, he's brilliant. Trae Young, he's brilliant and can kind of shoot from that range. But I don't know, like, are you ever going to have Steph Curry again? Like, maybe in our lifetimes, but not any time in the near future. And that is a guy who comes along, like, at best, like, even in this new paradigm, once every 20 or 30 years. But the Warriors, give them credit, because they fully recognize just how special it is that you have that guy. And you say, okay, like, do I need a DeMarcus Cousins at center? No, not really. What you need is just a guy who can rim roll. And that's why JaVale McGee, like, looked like he had those stretches in the finals against the Cavs, where he looked like Wilt Chamberlain or Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and just totally dominant, like flying through the air. And it's only because there's all this open space. And it's sort of the same reason Draymond is so great. Like, he's brilliant, but by the same token, like, if Draymond Green was on the Knicks this year, what would his stats have been? Like, maybe like 16 points per game. He would have shot like 42% from the field, like 31% from three, like 5 or 6 assists, with probably like 7 turnovers a game. Like, the reason he's so good is because, again, Steph just creates this wide open court, and he's constantly playing in these 4-on-3s, and his brilliant decision making is available to him because he has the numbers advantage time and time again, because you have literally the greatest shooter of all time initiating those pick and rolls. And it's all about like being like, okay, who's our best guy and how can we maximize the strengths of everyone else around that dude? And the Warriors are so, so good about punishing teams in the most painful ways and forcing teams into the most impossible decisions. And like even in this series, like there was a great article written about, I wish I remember the name of the guy because I could shout him out, but just like Steph Curry like setting back screens, which isn't something you'd really think about, but it just creates havoc. And doing all these little things with Steph and Clay that put teams into these binds that you just can't possibly deal with. And I know this is a full run-on for me now, but one final point on what you were saying about the bigs they were getting, it's that ability late in the draft to just to pick for very specific needs and not really to worry about a guy's upside. Like occasionally in the second round, you'll see these guys go, and this isn't a fair example because he went on to have a really good NBA career, and I think he was actually a first-round pick. But just like guys like Gerald Green, who are just incredible athletes and not necessarily the most skilled, then you'll hear like a draft pundit be like, oh, I love that pick, you know, like it's pretty unlikely, but he could be the next Giannis Antetokounmpo. Like, all right, that's fine, but it's like one out of every 1,000 times that guy is going to end up being a superstar. What you want to do when you're a great team is you want to leverage, again, the fact that you have all these good players by saying, all right, we need this very specific role. We need a guy who can run to the rim and can sort of protect the basket. And we don't really need him to do anything else. And that's when you can take a Jordan Bell or a Kevon Looney, like, and these guys who you know are never going to be stars, and you're like, that's fine, but I'm pretty certain, like, there's a 70% chance playing with Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green, this guy can stay on the floor in the NBA Finals. And they know that's all that they need. So I think it's a combination of those factors as well.
Yeah, and, you know, I guess that's pretty much – we've talked a lot now about the good stuff. I guess I should bring – I mean, we – when we set out to do this, we were like, oh, we'll talk about the good and the bad. And I started trying to think of like, oh, what could possibly be the bad things about the Warriors? And it's really hard to come up with one because it's like, you know, it's very nitpicky to try to pick out anything bad with the Warriors. The only thing that I could really come up with when I really sat down and thought about it is that ever since signing Durant and ever since they finally had to, you know, pay Curry his supermax, which took him from being like grossly underpaid to being only slightly underpaid, but paid as much as he can get within the CBA, you know, for the NBA. It sort of restricted their ability that they used to have to sign role players to fill out the bench, you know, in the fashion that they did early in the run when they were signing, you know, guys for, you know, filling out the roster with guys for, you know, a few million apiece. You know, you can go a little bit beyond the guys that are just okay with taking veteran minimums. You know, by finally leaning in and being like, we're going to spend all of our money on superstars. Like, we're done with the whole, like, developing part. Like, it's time to spend money on the best players available. And they got Durant and all that stuff. It sort of limited their spending ability the last few years. And, like, you could argue that, you know, should Durant leave for the Knicks this offseason or somewhere else? To me, it feels like it's either the Knicks or the Warriors at this point. But, you know, should he leave this offseason and should Klay Thompson leave this offseason, you know, then the Warriors are going to be in kind of a weird spot because Curry, within a couple years' time, is going to be making almost half the salary cap just by himself towards the end of his extension. And then they have to pay Draymond Green next year, presumably. So like that, if guys start to bolt and try to, you know, create their own legacy, so to speak, then, you know, they could be in some sticky financial times. But also, you know, it would have easily all been worth it for four titles in 5 years. I mean, that's like one of the most unprecedented runs in any sports history, you know, in any pro sports history, I should say. To win four titles in 5 years is just insane. So that's it as far as a quote unquote bad thing. But, you know, there's no question that even if everything falls apart and they have to entertain the idea of, you know, rebuilding in a few years or whatever, like whatever their version of rebuilding ends up being, it's not going to be a big deal because it was all worth it. You know, everything was all worth it for them. So we'll take a break and then we're going to come back and talk about how the Knicks can impart some of these lessons that we've talked about onto themselves. But first, we'd just like to remind you that today's show is brought to you in part by Untuck It. If you're looking for a great Father's Day idea, their shirts are specifically designed to look great untucked and feel comfortable at work or on the weekend. No tucking or tailoring required. Go to untuckit.com, promo code NBA, to get 20% off your order today.
Welcome back. into Locked On Knicks. We wanted to remind you today's show is brought to you by Grip 6 Belts. Grip 6 Belts are ultra lightweight. They have no holes, no flap, and they make a great Father's Day gift. I know my dad could probably use some new belts. I don't know if he's bought a belt in 20 years maybe, so this is something I'm going to think about. You can go to grip6.com/lock for a special offer on Grip 6 Belts. That is grip6.com/lock, L-O-C-K-E. Don't know why I didn't spell out that last part. I think it's just because I am so excited about Grip 6 Belts. Go get yours today. All right, Alex, let's get back into it. We broke down all the elements of what makes the Warriors great. So now I'm going to ask you, what can the Knicks take away from this Warriors run and apply to their own pursuit of becoming NBA champions?
Well, so I think I sort of touched on this during the first and the second segments, because it's the thing that I think is the most relevant, I guess, to the Knicks right now and where they are, and you know, compared to where the Warriors are now and how they got where they are. It's just patience. Like, that's like my buzzword with the Warriors that, you know, I think would apply to the Knicks in the current situation that they're in. And it seems like, to be fair, I'm not saying the Knicks don't seem like they're being patient, because I think that they are in their own certain way. Like, there's no perfect way to build a team. There's no like perfect blueprint that you can follow every single time that's always going to work. You know, there's so many different ways to approach it too. There's, you know, the Warriors sort of, they didn't necessarily build their team by tanking or anything like that. I mean, they won there once or twice. I mean, the year that they got Harrison Barnes, they tanked a little bit because they intentionally threw some games so they would hold on to their draft pick. So that's one thing you could, you know, bring up or whatever. But like, by and large, you know, they just kind of tried to keep getting better, and they managed to keep getting gradually better and better and better. And then eventually it all came together for them. But, you know, it wasn't without, you know, some stumbles at first, because, you know, as I alluded to earlier, Steph Curry at one point was, you know, viewed as like a fragile player that, you know, might not necessarily be a franchise player type. You know, he was dealing with ankle injuries constantly. You know, people were wondering if he was ever going to be able to play anything close to a full NBA season. You know, if he was going to end up out of the league within a number of years, even for how talented he was as a shooter and all that. And, you know, also just if he could be like your best player on a team. And then, you know, you had a guy like Draymond Green, who they drafted in the second round, you know, just didn't really, it's not anything against him. He didn't put it together the first couple of years in the NBA because he needed some time to adjust and to find sort of his niche in the NBA. And of course, you know, it helped that Steve Kerr got there and sort of unlocked him and was like, hey, you can handle the ball a little bit. Like, you can pass. Like, let's get the ball in your hands. You know, doesn't necessarily have to be Steph bringing the ball up the floor every time. Steph can come off curls and stuff. And, you know, that would be better for him as a shooter anyway, to give him space. And it's just sort of those things, like being patient, finding the right roles for your guys. You know, this applies, I think, to the Knicks right now as far as like Kevin Knox goes, Frank Ntilikina, who, again, I brought up previously, of like, you know, there's so many Knicks fans and, you know, writers and different personalities that are like, get these guys off the team. They suck. You know, they're going to be out of the league by next year. And to that, I say, like, you know, a lot of these players that are so good now took a lot of time to develop, you know, and I don't think it's a good look to toss a guy out before he even finishes his rookie contract necessarily, unless it's for a certain deal or extenuating circumstances or whatever, like Porzingis, you know, that's a totally different thing where there was dissent in the organization. They needed to get rid of him, you know, right then and there, or risk him walking away for basically nothing. You know, it's just making smart decisions and being patient with your roster, letting guys develop at, you know, at their own pace and, you know, getting to the point where they can be, you know, quality NBA players. And then I guess the other thing too would be only striking on, you know, free agents with big price tags and things if you think that they're true, true difference makers. And, you know, in the Warriors case, this was, Andre Iguodala. You could even argue David Lee right at the very beginning of when they started getting good again, you know, spending money to kind of put them take them. He was like their transitional free agent, you know, to take them from being bad to being like respectable again and being like a playoff team. And then signing Iguodala and Livingston and guys like that were the next move to take them from being like a playoff team to a championship team. And they managed to get there then. So that's kind of my thing for the Knicks is just patience. I want to see that out of them. I don't want them to make any like Amari 2010-esque moves or even any Melo trade-esque moves going forward where they really like sell the farm on something they can't, you know, that you're not even sure is going to be anything other than like a low-end playoff team.
Yeah, I think that's a great one. You said it a segment ago, and to me that sort of, if you wanted one word to kind of encapsulate what this Warriors run has been. And I do think some of it was almost incidental because you remember like Bob Myers like wasn't even there for the entirety of this run. But I mean, however they went about it, that's kind of what you take away from everything they've done. The fact that they were willing to wait on all these guys to come together. And then over the course of this run, the fact that like they really didn't make any rash moves. Like even like when Draymond got like a little like feisty and like had issues with Kerr, they just sort of worked it out and they kept him and everything was good. Like if I'm allowed to go cross sport here, like I wish the Giants had sort of applied that same philosophy with Odell Beckham. And like you have an incredibly talented guy who's clearly not like a maliciously bad dude. Like he might have some issues with his conduct, like how he acts and how his competitiveness manifests itself, but just like having the patience to be like, you know what, like that guy's talented. I want to bet on him and I want that guy on my team because he's better than the person we're going to replace him with. And even if that occasionally results in some fights or some testiness, like we have an infrastructure that can overcome that. So I do think even, like across all sports, that's a great quality to have and something worth noting. I guess for mine, I'll say, drafting for fit and kind of being willing to sacrifice upside sometimes for a guy you know is just going to be perfect on the team that you're building. And that's not really applicable when you're in a full rebuild. But when you have a team full of stars, I think it is. And the Knicks in the near future could have a team full of stars. So if I'm the Knicks this summer, and again, it's something that you can sort of immediately employ, like I maybe want Jared Culver or DeAndre Hunter over RJ Barrett, even though I think like if you just asked me like which of those three guys has the best chance to be a superstar, I'd answer Barrett, and I wouldn't put too much thought into it. Like he clearly sort of has like the highest ceiling of that group. But if you ask me like who do I want to play next to Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and let's just say full on dream scenario, Anthony Davis, which I guess they'd have to trade the pick, but that's neither here nor there. I'd say Jared Culver, and I'd say someone like, you know, like I want like a really good defender, someone who can work off ball, someone who's really, really sharp, someone who can pass. And so I'm kind of willing to sacrifice upside for fit, and that's true in terms of free agents, in terms of drafts. It's about getting stars and picking out the players who best accentuate their abilities and whose skill set could best be accentuated by the stars' abilities. And that's kind of my biggest takeaway from this Warriors team.
Yeah, I'm with you on that too. It kind of goes the same. We're almost in the same vein, you know, because you want to be patient for your guys to develop, and then you want to be smart about who you surround them with once they do develop or once you sign them or whatever the case may be. You want to make sure that you're drafting as well as signing. You know, people often look at the draft and they say, oh, you always want to draft for, you know, like what you said the last time, you know, I always want to draft for like the superstar potential. Like, oh, I want to find the next Giannis late in the first round or whatever, or I want to find the next Siakam or Draymond Green or whatever. But in reality, like, Siakam and Draymond Green are kind of the perfect complementary players, but you get my point. Like, you know, shooting for the stars doesn't always work. Sometimes it's good to just be like, this guy, I think, can be a good role player, and I don't think he's going to top out as an all-star or anything close to it, but he'll definitely, you know, there's like a better chance than not that he's going to top out as a good role player on this team. And I think that would, the Knicks, particularly in this draft, you know, if they can acquire another second round pick or something, that would be something that would be, you know, good for them to look at, is be like, let's not try to find this like diamond in the rough, like MacGuffin of a player that's going to, you know, be a potential franchise savior or whatever. Let's just look for someone who's going to fill in this roster really nicely, you know, hopefully that can shoot or rebound or do something at a very high level, even if they don't necessarily look like they're going to have a perfect all-around game. and, you know, use them to surround hopefully this, you know, free agent star class that we're about to get into in this coming off season. So, Gavin, if you don't have anything else to add, I think we could probably wrap this one up, though.
No, I think we did a pretty good job summing it up.
So, just as a reminder, today's show was brought to you by Hotels.com, Untuck It, and Grip Six Belts. Of course, we hope you're listening to us on Himalaya, and we hope that if you're listening to us on iTunes or whatever your favorite service, that you give us a good rating if you're enjoying the show. Other than that, we will be back tomorrow talking about the Toronto Raptors. We're going to do the same thing kind of all over again and break down how Toronto got to where they are now and what the Knicks could potentially do to emulate the Raptors in their pursuit of becoming a relevant franchise and team again. So all that is coming up tomorrow, but until then, peace out.